Hey, listeners, before we dive into how PSAOs and wholesalers might be impacting your pharmacy's bottom line, let's talk about sustainability and marketing with a simple change in your pharmacy. The PhilBox by Parcel Health is a biodegradable, water-resistant packaging solution that not only addresses environmental concerns, but also acts as a mini billboard for your pharmacy in your patient's home. Check it out at parcelhealth.co and use the keyword bizfarm with a Z for 10% off your order. Welcome to the Business of Pharmacy podcast, where we explore the business of pharmacy through candid, in-depth conversations with the industry's top leaders. Every Monday, tune in for insights and stories you won't find anywhere else. I'm your host, Mike Kelzer. Brett, for those that haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name is Brett Lauterbach. I'm a pharmacist in Nebraska. Bought my first store that summer and became an independent pharmacy owner to serve my community. On my first trip out to an AmerisourceBergen trade show, I got some advice from a car dealer of all people, one of the Midwest's larger car dealers, with no formal business training in pharmacy school like many of us. I asked him some advice and he said, "Man, you don't make money at the sale, you make it at the purchase," which I think is ever so more true today than it ever has been in pharmacy. So in the course of developing different protocols and business tactics here at a small town Nebraska pharmacy, and we just decided to form a consulting group that helps identify new business opportunities in your niche area and also the core savings as well.
All right, Brett, now you talked about your car salesman friend. On the sell side, I think you hate the opaque PBMs like I do, the big three, let's say. But your guy was talking about the buying side. Do you dislike the wholesalers and the PSAOs, the big ones like I do? I don't think I put them in the same category as the PBMs, but I'm not a fan of the big wholesalers or their PSAOs.
They're all one and the same.
With the PBMs too?
Well, yeah, I would imagine. I mean, we don't want to say the word price fixing, but we certainly know it's a very intelligent business.
To have people like us sacrifice our good time and efforts, and they're yanking all our profits out and putting us in the hole.
So who's the scapegoat? We're left holding the bag on everything from accountability to financial risk, risk of unwarranted side effects and such, and aberrant care plans. Who's the fool in the business? So I think we're looking at them.
Personally, I get embarrassed when people, if I ever told someone our business plan, for lack of a better word, I get embarrassed that I'm doing the damn thing. And I look at the bottom line and I'm like, all right, well, the bottom line is still there. So it's like throwing out bad salad or whatever at the end of the day in a restaurant. I mean, I'm looking at the bottom line, but you go down to individual pieces of it and individual plans of it. And it's rather embarrassing. And it makes me feel, dirty, I guess, that I'm even part of this and part of their pawns in this.
Well, yeah, what other business in the world do you allow your buy side or your wholesaler to negotiate your sell side, your PSAO?
I don't get that.
How did we get sucked into this notion that a simple faxed addendum or emailed addendum changes our pay rates and scales?
It does, doesn't it?
Thanks, Community Care RX, way back when. I mean, those guys are the ones that started this, in my opinion.
You're in a contract, and they simply can send a fax, and then that changes your contract.
Yeah, and then it's FOIA exempt. Who knew that a pharmacy contract would have FOIA exemption? Why?
What you mean by that is that you can't show it to people.
Freedom of Information Act, yes, of course. That has the FOIA exemption stamped up at the top of it. First and foremost, we're not supposed to share it. Second of all, is that they would go and ask for the copy of the contract. I mean, it should be public record. It's the fiduciary responsibility of the government to disclose how a PBM is managing our benefits that our tax dollars fund. No, they're FOIA exempt.
Yeah, once you get the government and things in their tax dollars, that doesn't seem right.
No.
All right, Brett. So I don't have a wholesaler. I'm not with one of the big threes. I don't carry any brand names. And therefore, I don't have any PSAOs. I think the big three and the big PSAOs are junky. That makes no sense to me. In my mind, the wholesaler couldn't care less what you're making. As long as you're in business and they can still send box to your store and you're still paying for them, they're going to make that rate go as low as they can in order to have more business for them.
Oh boy, we're getting into the core of Offenbach. So typically when we're looking at a wholesale contract, there's four pillars that we base our foundation on. One's distribution. Two is chargeback data. Three is days outstanding. And four, sales and marketing fees. And us as independent pharmacists, we haven't been able to get our group together to go and capture some of those. So distribution, you can pretty much count. It's anywhere from 4.8 to 5.2% is the margin that the wholesaler's most likely tapping the manufacturer. 4.8 to 5.2%, in our opinion, is going toward days outstanding. So that's cash flow management, which we all know how that goes. We're, you know, either paying daily or once every 2 weeks, but how long is the wholesaler holding on to the money for the true up on the chargeback data from the manufacturer? 6 to 9 months. We didn't cover sales and marketing. So there's another 4.8 to 5.2% with the manufacturers being charged by the wholesaler for a sales and marketing fee. I don't remember the last time I had anybody come in and do any sales and marketing in my pharmacy or my clientele via a wholesaler. Let's see. And what was the third? Chargeback, right? So which class of trade? Where was it bought? Where was it sold? Which is the majority of the funny math that happens. Let's call a spade a spade. Class of trade is utter chaos. It's the reason 340Bs and the peril it's in, but no one wants to address that ugly big elephant in the room called class of trade.
Brett, slow this down for me. So These four things you mentioned, those are areas where the wholesaler is making money, even though they're crying that they don't have the margin. You're saying that's where they get their margin from?
Absolutely. We bring these reps into our stores and they're our best friends. They take us to trade shows, buy your family, take us to ride whatever, Disneyland. But when we're talking pharmacy contracting, distribution, we lose money at WAC minus five. Yeah, they probably are starting to on brand name, especially.
The wholesalers, yeah.
Yeah, but they neglect to mention the other taxes that they're putting on the manufacturers. And what we need is the manufacturers to come into the room and start pointing some fingers. But I doubt it. Not going to happen because we're not the total of the business. We're the small segment being the independents. And we think that pharmacy is in the retail pharmacy setting is where the majority of the transactions go on. But from what I understand, some of the experts that I have access to, they're indicating that it's maybe 50-50 is going on in, you know, prescription bottle rollout. The other 50% is going on in the hospital and doctor setting. I mean, it really brings these interesting dynamics into what is the total net that's coming, you know, into the wholesaler's coffers. But more importantly, how do we as independent pharmacists claw whatever monies we can back and start deploying any kind of accountability that's possible?
So in my mind, the PBMs, I've put them in the same category as some of the taxes and cable TV companies and things like that. I've kind of given up on that side. Is that the point where people have to badmouth the wholesalers and the PSAOs and things like that? Or is there room still to do something that is, I don't know, cordial?
My gut tells me it's all coming down, but
it's coming down from
look at the closures.
The closures of
the business has to collapse and there has to be a phoenix that raises that it's going to continue to service the American public.
People maybe don't care what we think as independent owners, but when it hits the public finally, then they can try to start pointing fingers at some of the wholesalers.
I think it's just all so intertwined. I don't know how you can't pull a card without any of it. Like it all has to hurt. I have folks get a hold of me like, how are we going to sustain viability, access to care in the state of Nebraska? The answer that I get is there has to be these relationships established with the critical care access hospitals across rural Nebraska, and that's how through the 340B network. And that's not an option.
Basically, you had the PBMs doing this, and now the manufacturers might be doing things to make up for that, and the wholesalers get in there. So ultimately, now it's going to hurt the care the public gets because independent pharmacies or anybody that we think is doing the proper level of care is no longer going to be around. Brett, from the little conversation we're having here, you have it in your desire to help people when these deserts come, people are not getting serviced and it pisses you off.
So the future is, we see it for Nebraska. I don't know. I hope we can stand up and keep the fight and keep places open. Otherwise, we'll have these central fill facilities and we'll roll things out through these discount retail outlets that are cropping up in every small community and even in the urban settings, which are glorified C-stores.
What's C-store mean?
Convenience store, like 7-Eleven.
But they're not selling pharmacy drugs.
Really?
I mean, they're not selling prescription drugs.
Not yet. They are in the South. They brought on some leadership that had some core background and training at Cardinal, for instance. So don't tell me it's not there.
But they would have every right to put a pharmacy in. Are they maybe doing like a remote fill and they've just got a machine there or something like that? That's not just pharmacy competition you're talking about.
Well, yeah. I mean, Mike, if you and I are having a cup of coffee talking this over, I mean, what's the greatest fear? Walmart back in the day, 80s and 90s, we all heard Grandma and Grandpa complaining about it. It's going to kill small town America. Well, the nail in the coffin is Dollar General. They've got the distribution network. There's a store every 10 miles. You partner up with one of the big three wholesalers, which we know the other one that's in Tennessee now with its central fill facility. It makes sense for them to do that.
See, my problem, where I live, Brett, this doesn't have an impact on me mentally because I've got 30 pharmacies within 10 miles and I've got a Dollar General and Dollar Tree and I've got something on every corner. I mean, I'm in the city, but what you're saying is some of these stores that are maybe out a little bit, they're not big enough to maybe have a Walmart come in, but they are big enough to have a Dollar General come in and be that space.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about those 30, 40 stores that are around you. What's the zip code? What's the number of stores? Today, what's going to be the number of stores in April when we have proactive and retroactive DIR fees? There's been some horrible rumors going around in the underworld of wholesale on closure rates. God forbid.
That when the first of the year comes around, a lot more are going to be closing.
Yeah, you got to have the financial wherewithal to withstand your prior fee plus the proactive fee that's on the front end.
Yeah.
You know, there's Ben Jolly, our expert on that. Well, he can coach about anybody through it. He's pretty good at that.
So. I got to get Ben back on. He's been on 4 times.
Oh, no way.
All right, Brett, let me get this straight. You seem like you've got to let something out of you here. So let me think of a scenario here. Let's say that you can pick what it is. Let's say you got 5 minutes to be on some morning news show and you can say whatever the hell you want, or you get 5 minutes in front of Congress, or you get 5 minutes in front of the CEOs of America. Which one of those are you going to pick and what are you going to say?
Senator Grassley, why did you opt to go with the PBMs rather than with class of trade and VA rollout with Medicare Part D in 2007? Because that's the way it rolled out. They were contemplating VA class of trade for Medicare Part D, which meant costs were capped, cost plus. And here's the genie in the bottle on that, I think, was Grassley's claim was that if we did that, if we gave Medicare Part D VA price, the cash customer, so what, our self-insureds, our folks and, you know, not Medicare, Medicaid, not VA, they're going to see cost escalation. Man, boy, did he tell the future, because it sure happened either way. And now look at us. So my other question would be, from 2006 to 2016, I think it's Brian Pertuzzi out of Florida brought this to my attention. Insulin went up 700%. You own a store. Your margin go up 700%? Mine sure didn't. So now I'm a negative margin.
I don't sell any insulin.
Yeah, neither do I. I send them to Walmart to buy their Reliant stuff. Better yet, go to Canada or Mexico or go to a 340B. Yeah, even that doesn't work anymore. So where is the 700% markup? And show me where that happened each year and show me the math where it all went. Because from what I understand, Novo and Lilly didn't make all that money. From what I've been explained, if you and I own a product, maybe we're capped at inflation. It means there's 675 markup in 10 years that went somewhere else.
And it either went to the PBMs or it went back in some of the politicians' pockets.
Well, I think it's a silent tax to pay for care. Goes out through social programs, funds social programs as well. Yeah, a lot of it goes to PBMs, a lot of it goes to the wholesalers, the GPOs, but we've got to fund 340B, we've got to fund indigent care, which that's fine. But if I'm my big employer that's down the street from me here in Madison, ask me for my philanthropy, don't take it from me. And by God, don't put me as the pharmacy in the middle of as the fall guy.
So you're saying that profit goes to people we expect it to go to. We don't think it's right, but it does go there. But some of that other stuff goes in the pocket, not necessarily of the politicians, but might go to one of their pet causes.
Yeah, I mean, imagine us, you and I being Novo. Let's be fun. Let's be Novo, because then now we're helping people lose weight. And we're operating a program, and this class of trade gets reported on one prescription claim. A gentleman goes to a 340B facility, right? Seek care. Uses his wife's insurance. He's a retired vet. So what could happen there? 340B claim. So we give the discount on the acquisition of the drug. Pharmacy bills at retail class of trade, the most expensive in the world. PBM beats him up and chases down a rebate. Should be disqualified because it's 340B, but it squeaks through. So we gave a discount. We gave a rebate. And then the VA comes back and they say, no, wait, that was for one of our soldiers. We want our rebate too. We, the manufacturer, just got triple dip. There's our problem, class of trade, chargeback data. So I believe this gets cleaner with blockchain acumen and safe chain drug delivery, because in my opinion, it's more than just buy side and tracking from manufacturer to the pharmacy. If we can extend it into the dispensing, right, which we will, the math should work itself out in the transparency of who the payer is and who wrote the script, so that we're not going to put the manufacturer in peril.
Tracking, I thought that was more of a physical tracking, and you don't have to go physically through a PBM building to have their hands in it. So how does tracking it help to know who's taking the profit off of it?
It's just attaining a data metric. Class of trade. What class of trade was the doctor that wrote for that drug? Is he 340B? Is he VA? What's the origination site of the prescription and the care? Because that's where a manufacturer can be tapped for a discount, correct? And then what class of trade was it sold in? Was it a retail pharmacy, closed-door pharmacy, long-term care, hospital, philanthropic pharmacy? Gotta love those guys. VA, 340B. So then on that sell side, it'll qualify or disqualify the rebate to the PBM. Tells us who the plan sponsor is.
Brett, you're talking more than I understand, because here's as deep as I get. I have a bottle of something I sell, and then somebody says to me, hey, I used to work at such and such hospital. You wouldn't believe what they pay for this. It's dollars on the $500 or whatever it is. And I'm like, oh, that sucks.
Right.
So it sounds like that unbalance is what people are using to dip into these things with those kind of spreads by changing the origination and so on of what these prescriptions are.
Yeah. So that gets into the pillars of the wholesale manufacturer negotiation, is they use that class of trade to manipulate cost. Sometimes we see things we shouldn't, right, as pharmacy owners, and we see, oh, let's just throw one out as an example. Not saying this has happened, but Ozempic at $300, $320. What did it come into the port at from across the pond, 320. All right. When it hits my buy side, we're upwards of almost 900 and some, close to $1,000. So why all that gravy? And then if it only goes to a hospital or to a 340B program, what, 360, 380, what is it? So what's with the discrepancy? Where's the index? And the public isn't aware of it. And the pharmacy owners are not aware of it. Like, we can't expect the public to know if we don't even know ourselves.
Spread that out for me. All right. So it comes over the pond at $300 and then it's $900 to the pharmacy. So where's that $600 going?
Well, first, who's ascribing it? Like, who monitors it? First, we file our DA, retail, closed door. And then the sublayer of that is our MPI and NCPDP filings. What class of trade are we in? So MPI, taxonomy, retail, closed door, whatnot. So then the wholesalers, that's where they get to get crafty.
Oh, that's where they make that big profit because they buy it as it's going to be, I'm just going to call it hospitalish, and they sell it like it's retailish.
And that's where we get our class of trade shifts. You never want a class trade shift. You do not want to go from a lower access cost class of trade to a retail class of trade. So you would never take a closed door or a hospital or a 340B drug from someone and bring it into your retail setting and claim it as your own in retail. Why is that? Because that all impacts the downstream chargeback data on what gets rebated back and tallied for best price for the government.
It throws off the true purchase price.
And then you see the exit of manufacturers from the 340B program, for instance, because they're being tapped too many times. They're not profitable.
You're very well versed in this, Brett. So what does this hurt? Who does it hurt?
Well, I think it hurts the key stakeholders, right? So it's us. We're the boots on the ground performing the pharmaceutical care, trying to triage these patients with our care teams. The plan sponsors, and that's a whole other rabbit hole, as that fiduciary responsibility starts to get diced out more and more each day. The patient, that's obvious. And then the biggest plan sponsor in the world, which is who? Medicare. So state and federal agencies. But I also throw the manufacturers in this bucket. I think that they get abused, but you're not going to hear very many pharmacists talk that way, I don't think.
Yeah, they probably get abused because the PBMs, a lot of times there's nowhere else for them to go once the PBMs have their arm behind their back.
Can you imagine sitting in front of a Senate Finance Hearing Committee on drug cost and you have to sit there and take it on the chin knowing that we don't set this price?
All right. So, Brett, your 5 minutes I gave you, you spent about 15 seconds asking Grassley something. Now you got like 4 minutes on your clock. What are you going to say as you're sitting at that long table in front of Congress? What kind of stuff are you talking about to them in the vernacular that they would understand?
They would understand. I have these conversations every day. What's relationship worth? What's accountability worth? What's value-based care mean to you? What's cost savings mean? What's enhanced access to care mean? What do moral and ethical considerations mean in the equation of how we reimburse pharmacists for the care we roll out every day? I don't have the answer, Mike.
I have that conversation with some on my team because I was out of the pharmacy for a while before COVID. I came in right when COVID was picking up and I got a renewed sense of what we do for our patients, which was almost more depressing. It's one thing not getting paid for something you don't think you're needed for, but when you're not getting paid for something you're needed for. And I think about the stuff we do for our patients. And I don't know where the hell else they would survive except with us. And the problem with pharmacists, too, is that we give the same service, whether we're making minus a dollar or plus $100, it's the same service. And so what happens is you don't see a decrease in service. You see cliffs. You see this portion in my city getting served. And then for whatever reason, our pharmacy's not there and our thousands of customers fall off a cliff so quickly that there's nobody there to catch them. They just splat on the ground. And to your point, Brett, how are those people going to get caught when that cliff comes for us, if it does?
I got some great advice during COVID. I work with one of the nation's, well, I would say world's best infectious disease experts when it comes to COVID. Graduated from Harvard and MIT at the same time in the 70s, top of his class. Trained at NIH, left due to moral and ethical conflict. And there would be nights where it was just, Lou, what are we going to do? Like, there's not enough of us. No, but one at a time. So, one at a time, right? We like to practice the Luke 10 style of medicine here, I guess. I mean, that was the purpose of MySam in 2009. MySam being short for My Samaritan, where two may have passed somebody by, but we're here to pick you up, care for you, put you on our donkey and take you back to the inn, pay and come back and check on you and maybe even pay again. And sometimes our hearts get ahead of our head. You got to have margin, have mission. So if I described that scenario to Senator, to Congress, a good Samaritan story, nobody tells you about how that Samaritan was funded. So my question for the Senator, Congress would be, how are you going to fund that? Because that's what we're here to do. And that's what pharmacists do every day. Whether you're a Christian, Jewish, Muslim, most of us pharmacists have big caring hearts. We need funding or you're going to lose us. And so good luck with your other two, because we know what they did. They were serving themselves just like many are today in healthcare. So if you lose those of us that care, I don't know.
That's a really cool analogy, because two don't care, but the third one seemed to have cared. But once those funds dry up, then nobody gets served.
All right, Brett, so back on class of trade.
I firmly believe class of trade is taxation without representation. Like, it's the biggest tax on the American people that we have no idea that is even going on.
All right, let me back this up. So the tax is the pharmacist. Let's use your $300, $900 scenario again. The tax is the $600 tax that somebody, either pharmacists or companies or whoever would pay even close to that, they're getting taxed by the wholesalers?
Yeah, the retail class of trade is your tax.
People buying at retail, they're getting taxed.
Amen. Yeah. So an international pricing index would be nice. We've learned some things. Let's take Eliquis, for instance. Been a while since I looked at a bottle.
$500.
EWP of, like, let's call it 550.
Yeah,
550, whatever it is. Why can we buy Eliquis for $12 in Turkey? Why can we buy Eliquis for $54 in Germany? Why can we buy it for $18 in Romania? And we can track and trace that all the way back to the same lot out of the manufacturing facility in France. Why is the question? Like, why?
Why do they sell it for so less to other people? Is it supply and demand? And if you charge more than that, the citizen couldn't afford it? Or why do they charge so little compared to the U.S.? I mean, I know we're the suckers and the tax and all that kind of stuff, but it seems like they could take more out of some countries.
I think at the end of the day, there's the misnomer. I mean, if we were to talk to Novo or Lilly or one of these companies, what do they need at the end of the day on a dead net box of insulin? And I think if we talk to the folks at the MATS Act and insulin matters, and that spearheaded out of Nebraska, they're happy with $40, $50 for a box of insulin. Well, okay, I'm cool with that. I know you are. So we've got our first iteration of cost. Now what's next on plus? So the level of care. What do you need me as a pharmacist to go and gather you, Mr. Manufacturer, Miss Manufacturer, for further drug development and monitoring parameters that need to go on behind that? What are you willing to pay me to go and facilitate that action and be your touch point, your engagement point on behalf of that patient? I really want to start diving down into those conversations. We all know the rigors of black box drug and the data collection that needs to go on before we can deploy those medications.
I think the messy thing about it all, Brett, here's where it's so screwy, is you talk about what groups need what, and you put pharmacists in the mix. And I know I talked earlier about the whole bottom line, but you put pharmacists in the mix, and it's like, all right, the manufacturer needs this much, so-and-so needs this much, pharmacy, it's going to be minus $50. It's like, what do you mean minus? You mean like they only need 50? It's like, no, they'll lose $50 on it. And it's like, well, that's not, let's start over here. We don't know what does that mean? All right, let's start over. Manufacturer needs this. They need this. What does a pharmacy need? Well, nothing. The pharmacy is going to pay you to bring this product into their store. It's ludicrous. I mean, it's beyond ludicrous. You can't even have the conversation.
Yeah. Are we chasing our tail? They're telling us they don't need us.
Not only do they not need us, they don't want us, because every time that a pharmacy's filling something, it's not going to their mail order place.
Exactly.
So, Brett, you still got about 4 minutes left. Where else are you going to go with this? Who else are you talking to? I can get you into the president's office. I can get you into CEO's office. I can get you wherever you want to go. You got 4 minutes left.
Do you want to save 80% if I facilitate adherence and compliance for you? That's bona fide adherence and compliance. 80% of healthcare costs. Do you want to shift 22 to 24% of your GDP from the nonprofit hospital space into a space where we can reallocate those dollars back to the consumer and put it back in a taxable revenue? Now we're talking.
And I think I'm following you. Who's the vehicle for that? Community pharmacists?
Absolutely. Bona fide adherence and compliance. I'm not talking fill rates, because any PBM can tout their adherence and compliance rates. We all know the ugly hit in the room on that one, where you see the pictures of the stacked up boxes in someone's closet of meds that have been sent to them. But we're talking, we're monitoring patients. We're making sure they're taking their medications, and our outcomes show it in the monitoring parameters.
I think part of that problem is that, starting with your used car guy, Brett, was he a friend of yours or just an acquaintance?
No, his name was plastered over everything in 2000. So no.
All right, then I can talk about him. It started with my grandma, God rest her soul. She'd buy like 4 pair of shoes about 3 sizes too small because they were on discount, that kind of stuff. But it goes with the used car salesman. JCPenney tried to do that. This CEO came in about 10 years ago and wanted to clear up all the sales, and it failed on them. They had to go the route of Kohl's and so on. And the problem with all of this stuff is everybody's kind of confused, and then you start throwing out rebates and discounts and all that. And instead of looking at true prices, you throw that talk around, and some of the stuff you're talking about kind of goes out the window, unfortunately.
Well, are you familiar with the ACO action with employers and fiduciary responsibility with, like, say, retirement benefits? An employer group manages retirement benefit. There's fiduciary responsibility in there where we can't let some retirement broker come in and take gross advantage of the contribution. Those same rules and obligations are in place for healthcare spend as well. Mm-hmm. Then we just really someone needs to take action and file suit. So what would that mean? That would mean you and I are an employee grinding out every day, and we feel like our healthcare contributions are not being managed properly. And we could really drill into where's all the layers of payment happening in, just say, a pharmacy prescription transaction. And why was one of the PBMs able to retain 45%, 52% rebate, and it didn't come back to me, or did come back to me, and why didn't I get it as the employee? So I don't know. I think if general knowledge, if an employer group contributed X dollars amount, 80% of it has to be spent. Otherwise, it has to get rebated back to the contributors to the plan. Can you imagine that actuarial nightmare when you have X amount of employees and some quit, some start mid-year, some don't? So this under the table agreement that we're going to spend down your policy to 80% is quite disgusting. How are we going to transition this healthcare spend into the model of retirement planning? And where's pharmacy's role in that? And where's healthcare's role in the fiduciary responsibility of health spend? Cost plus begins to knock on that door, but that's a race to the bottom when you have folks out there that'll do things for a loss. So where do we prove our value as pharmacists? You know, and it gets into the crux of every disease state starts with what, Mike? Diet and lifestyle management. And when are we going to place value there?
I think we have to ask questions like, how far did you walk this morning? What have you done personally to bring this down? You know, as far as exercise or whatever. It all goes back, I think, to a lot of it to one person, you know, self.
Personal responsibility, Mike.
Brett, coming out as an 18-year-old now out of high school, would you pick pharmacy?
You're going to make me state this publicly? What is it? Answer a question with a question? I don't know, Mike. What would you do?
What would I do? This is what I tell my kids. I don't really tell them, but if they came to me and wanted to be in pharmacy, I would say, first of all, don't look at what I'm doing because our business is volatile. You don't know what's going to happen. It could be put under with just some law from our governor or something like that. So I would say, don't go into it because of what I'm doing. If you love the science of it and so on and really love the drug thing of it, then go into it. Would I do it now? One of the issues I see is that when pharmacy used to be a four-year degree, like when my dad was there, and for me, the whole thing was 5 years. And it's like, well, that's just an undergrad, basically, and then you can go do whatever the hell you want to do. But now with the pharmacy school being, you know, six, seven, 7.5 years, whatever, it's not real practical to use it as your undergrad. So you better be pretty damn sure that you're in the right profession with that. And I can't say I'd be doing that right now. I wouldn't want to commit that much to this profession of 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah, I guess do-overs, right?
I'm not even saying over because I would not change a thing in my life. But I mean, like, right now, if you were an 18-year-old in the year 2023.
Definitely. I would go some sort of government route. I've seen some of my colleagues go down that, whether it's Indian Health Services or VA or military route. And they're progressive institutions that your paycheck isn't determined by third-party mix. And the VA is an awesome place, man. Like, what was I thinking? I enjoyed that rotation for me personally. I like the structure, but didn't do it.
So, Brett, you're saying if you graduated now with anything you could do, whether it's engineering or business or teaching or whatever, you would pick pharmacy, but you might go a different direction in pharmacy.
Yeah, I would go pharmacy with fewer barriers. But now, who needs tech acumen? It's outpacing our capacity to be able to learn it ourselves.
People get a little bit afraid of AI or something like that. And my opinion is, all right, when we get the age of every U.S. resident to 100, and when you've got heart attacks and cancer cured, and if you've got compliance on this or that, then we can worry maybe we're not needed. But let the AI do all the things that a calculator did back in the 60s, and then let us set higher goals. I think we can't be afraid to set higher goals.
No, and I'm glad you brought that up because I saw some release this weekend, I think, or maybe even this morning on an AI was given some clinical problems that involved pharmacy. And like, it was a really less like 25% of the questions were answered correctly. So this is too much in the weeds that we get into. AI is going to be tough to capture.
You mean, so where AI was passing the legal exams and things like that, they didn't do as well with real life stuff in pharmacy?
No, it wasn't legal exams. It was more infracta. So we present a patient case, from what I remember the context. So we present a patient case and they only got it right 25% of the time.
AI was taking legal exams at law schools and it was doing incredibly well. But patients, real life patients, are a different beast.
Oh, sure. I think law is rigid. It's black and white. And then you start throwing in pharmacy contracts. That's where it gets gray. I don't know how many conversations I have with pharmacists. And no, I think you might be mistaken here. And that's not law. That's contractual law. And then I'll get caught in the same rhetoric. Like, no, Brett, you're getting wrapped around the axle of contracts, not law.
Hey, Brett, pharmacy could break AI. You'd say there's $80 on this $400. And ChatGPT would say, okay, you made $80. No, minus 80. No, that doesn't make sense. And you'd keep fighting with ChatGPT until it says, I quit.
I'm going to audit you.
Yeah.
Or what's the latest tactic? We're going to investigate you. And so then we're going to stop all payments.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, we're going to throw your payments through a PSAO that's going to hold on to them even longer.
Brett, we stopped wholesalers like 3 years ago when we stopped doing brand name. And that's when we stopped PSAOs. And all of a sudden, I'll get like a check for like $6,000 from the PSAO. It'll show up like 2.5 years later. And we'll call them up. We'll be like, what was this for? They're like, it was such and such and such. It's like, okay, fine. I'm not complaining, but it's so nebulous.
Wow.
Brett, thanks for joining us today. It's nice to have fresh perspectives with a little bit of drive behind it. Maybe it just helps me to know that other people are out there fighting so I can just sit on my ass and just have conversations here. But way to go. Nice to have you on. Congratulations on what you're doing and keep it going.
Nick, thanks, Mike, for having me. Hopefully we had some meaningful conversation here that can be applicable in the day-to-days and help folks out.
Brett, thank you, and we'll keep in touch.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.